Welcome to What in God's Name? He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel.
And we are recasting our social narrative for the purposes of shining a light and going deep on matters that pertain to human flourishing.
Yeah, we really want to use the lenses of theology and moral philosophy because the lenses of politics and economics, which is the default position for our public conversations, those lenses are restrictive, reductive, narrow, and really don't get at questions of human flourishing.
Restrictive and reductive, yes.
If you want to know more about What in God's Name and who we are and what we do, have a look at our trailer on our website, whatingods.com. We do ask you to subscribe to What in God's Name on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts and leave a review. That helps us out. It's a simple way that you can help us out on What in God's Name. We are in a series examining the mental health of our country in the pandemic and even more broadly, generally our mental health in our society. So not just the individual, Shayna. Not just the individualized look at mental health, which is often the lens, but what deeper stories can we tell about our shared common life together, given all the signs of mental and spiritual and moral distress and disease in our culture? So we're coming at this with a bifocal, at least a bifocal vision, both the individual and the societal, the communal, the collective. Last week, we heard from Leslie Rawlings, who practices mental health counseling just outside of New York City. And last week, we heard her talk about the functional adult. We heard her talk about fragmentation. We heard her talk about the ways that we try to fill ourselves with external approval, external accomplishments, really leaving behind the core of who we are. So those facets of health and dis-ease.
And she also talked about, you know, the core of where along the path this stuff comes off the tracks. And I think that's something I certainly want to shine a light on, because I think thinking about how we're raised, I think most of us would have to acknowledge there were some deficits along the way. You know, our parents weren't perfect people. They were dealing with whatever deficits they were raised with. And that certainly contributes to a longing, to a sense of fear, sense of shame. We talked a lot about insecurity. But as Leslie says, it's, you know, not all lost. Everything is on a continuum. We can move to a place of health. I like to think that we here at What in God's Name are doing our part to help folks you know, stay curious, go deep, and shine a little light into some of those places which could use a little light in ourselves and in others.
So we're about to listen to part two of our conversation with Leslie Rawlings. We invite you, our listeners, to do what Shayna and I will be doing, which is listening for a word or phrase that really captures your attention, your imagination, something that you find provocative and interesting. We invite you to send that to us so that we can have a little piece in the mailbag. And Shayna and I will be back to share our reflections on the word or phrase that sticks out to us, a kind of non-spinny wheel, spinny wheel.
A non-spinny wheel, spinny wheel.
So to speak. And Shayna, one other thing before we listen to Leslie, I was thinking our show having to do with mental health, who knows who's going to be listening to it? So I think it's due diligence on our part to give out the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline phone number. If you need it or a friend needs it, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline phone number is 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. That's a 24-hour availability on that phone number.
Leslie, I was wondering, because we're so often, I think, bumping into other people's trauma, you know, unintentionally, but you kind of know when you've hit it, you know, when somebody's reaction to something is just so far
beyond what the hell just happened in the room, that you find yourself sitting there going, what is this really all about? You know, because it can't be about what's actually happening in the room. Do you have like any suggestions for, you know, ways that we could humanely, compassionately navigate?
That's a great question. You know, I talked about like these five core issues of loving the self, protecting the self, knowing the self, taking care of our needs and wants, and also being interdependent and containing ourself. You're really talking about boundaries, and there's physical sexual boundaries, but really I think most of us live a lot from the internal, which is the talking and listening in our daily interpersonal engagements. And you know, if people are activated or unstable or dysregulated emotionally, we can protect ourselves from that. So very often people that I work with will use kind of imaginary light or screens or bubbles or glass jars somehow so that they don't absorb that other person's dysregulation. Because we don't want to carry somebody else's energy. I mean, children can't protect themselves, so they automatically carry wherever the parent is not responsible emotionally. And that's part of the trauma work, is releasing that energy. But in, you know, as an adult, we can protect ourselves. And we can imagine them further away or in whatever metaphor you want to use to not let in that energy. And likewise, you know, we can get activated, dysregulated, and she's got different methods of how to regulate yourself and how to say what you mean without being offensive. So not shutting down, not getting out of control, but using that firmness and assertiveness. And this is used in many different therapeutic models, but it's basically repeating the data, like what I heard you say, and my thought about it, and my feelings about it. So we're keeping, she very much draws from the 12-step world and keeping on our side of the street, being accountable to ourselves without being offensive or without losing ourselves.
Which is probably a good suggestion regardless. I wish they taught that stuff. You know, I wish they taught 12-step stuff and like Al-Anon. I wish that was like part of curriculum. You know, you shouldn't be able to graduate sixth grade without having fundamental Al-Anon boundary skills. Of course, then it might put all you folks out of business. But
you know, if you grow up not being protected, how are you as an adult going to know how to protect yourself? If you grow up being overly protected and helicoptered, how are you, you know? So, and that's the interesting thing, is that she kind of tracks out, like, if we have been really not seen and not guided and not emotionally validated or supported or mirrored, we're going to be seeking that out. And if the parent's been too intrusive, too helicoptered, too enmeshed, we're going to be more avoidant. You know, if love means being that the parent is so close, there's going to be that trap, suffocation, allergy to intimacy, and we're going to be more on the avoidance side. Or, you know, if the parent wasn't there enough, we're going to be seeking that out. And so, you know, and that's where she goes into her second book of Love Addiction, Love Avoidance.
We'd be remiss in this conversation if I didn't ask Leslie for some perspective on the connection between trauma, childhood trauma, and addiction. We know that, I mean, just the statistics of overdoses during the pandemic, overdose deaths, I believe I read 100,000 in the year ending last April, which is up. I mean, we've known that the numbers of overdose deaths have gone up during pandemic time. So that's just one statistic. There's a ton of statistics. Totally an underreported, undertold story in our shared common life together. So I'd love to hear what you can offer us on the connection between trauma and addiction.
As far as the pandemic, I mean, I can only talk about my own experience. What I see with clients and friends and so forth is that I think for sure the pandemic induced trauma, but I also think if there was some instability that just pushed, if there was some inclinations toward depression, anxiety, just pushed it over the edge. But as far as, yeah, I mean, I have always worked in addiction and really medicating, whether it's the phone, the TV, the drug, the booze, the gambling, the food, the fantasy, you know, it's just, it's a form of soothing. It's a form of escape. It's a form of so many things, nurture, comfort. You know, it really depends on the person. But underneath using, when people get sober, you know, sometimes they're okay and they get sober, and sometimes they hit all of this stuff. And usually that's the client that I see. They're either wanting to get sober or getting sober from whatever it is. And this is what they're hit with. And there's just a lot of pain that we don't know how to deal with. I think most people really do want to, but it's just so overwhelming. So you've got to help the person tolerate the pain and titrate the pain. You can't just flood into that pain. But that's part of the, as we slowly begin to learn how to tolerate the pain, the need to medicate or run, you know, obviously 12-step is essential, but it's the trauma work underneath that is extremely important.
Yeah, so when you're talking about pain, you're talking about psychic pain.
Really talking about what a child needs and what they do or don't get.
And when they don't get it, that's the trauma. And then you were talking about the people you see who have had some form of addiction as a response to the trauma. And it was really interesting for me to hear you say, like, how difficult that is to go into that pain.
Well, and there's a lot of deep grief of, you know, a child really comes in born connected. I think one of you just said that. We're born to connect, and to not have that available parent, there's a lot of grief there. And it's not a one and done event. This is an ongoing sort of going deeper and deeper. But it, so that doesn't mean somebody has to be in therapy forever. It's just learning when, how to tolerate the pain, how to get to the pain, what's blocking the pain, how to work with the body to allow, the body knows what to do, you know, and tears release cortisol and adrenaline, and the body knows how to have pain. We just have to help guide it.
Are there any healthy parents raising healthy kids, or, you know, are we sort of doomed on some level to wind up lacking something?
I think we're, you know, being on Earth and being in the human condition, there's always something to look at. And again, it's all, trauma's on a continuum. You know, it's everybody's story, you know, we're all somewhere on the continuum.
Shana, you got any more? Please feel free. I just wondered.
Generational trauma. Is that something you can speak to? You know, in a couple of minutes. What about generational trauma? Would you like what nugget from that, you know, ginormous area?
You know, we try to go a couple generations back. I mean, definitely the Holocaust informs a lot of people. I really think slavery. And we kind of go back to the impact of whatever grandparents, great-grandparents went through, and looking at the impact on our grandparents, our parents. And this is where sort of the empathy for them being human and doing the best they can comes from. But it takes time to get there. But it's helpful to understand where our parents and grandparents have come from. And again, you know, they were busy surviving whatever war, whatever, you know, they were busy surviving. There weren't the availability, the trauma work that's available now. I mean, you can go on YouTube and look up Pia Melody and Peter Levine and, you know, just all these incredible pioneers of very deep trauma work. And it's all right there. I'm not telling you, I would never advise anybody to do your work that way, but just to be informed. But of course, it's in our cellular being. the epigenetic of it and how to work with the nervous system and releasing that is extremely important.
It really makes me wonder, from a sociological perspective, what this period of time is going to look like 25 years down the road, maybe, 10 years down the road. But as we've got a whole bunch of kids who, were sort of born after the towers came down, right? Came of age in a pandemic, certainly didn't get, their high school proms or that, all those things that would say that. So their worlds have been turned upside down. It's kind of back to my question about expectations, with the right support, a reasonably nurturing home, can you encounter all of that and actually become more resilient as opposed to more traumatized?
I believe that's all possible, but the person has to be willing to learn how to do that. Yes, for sure. I believe in that resilience. I mean, over the years and the people that I've worked with and what their stories are, and yes, resilience, I think that's part of the human condition. But it's how to find that, how to know when your body is in trauma, we call it the fight, flight, freeze, the sympathetic, the dorsal, and how to bring it back to safety. That is, it's probably, Pia's model is incredibly important, but even getting the nervous system safe is essential.
At the risk of going over time, because I know I'm about to ask another big question, but Chris can edit us down. Because you've mentioned the somatic work, which I'm familiar with, but I don't know if all of our listeners are. And I'm wondering if you could, particularly now, because you're talking about the importance of being body aware, of living in flesh, so that we carry those awarenesses and can use them to our advantage as opposed to them using us to our own disadvantage. So I was just wondering if you could talk briefly about somatic work.
It's based on the nervous system. Somehow, something in the environment is threatening the body. The body doesn't know that it's 2021. And yes, there's an Omicron happening and all that, but it doesn't know that in this moment I'm safe and okay. It gets threatened and it goes back in time. And there's fight. The sympathetic charge is fight or flight. The dorsal is the freeze, which is really extreme terror, and the body thinks it's going to die and it shuts down. And it's recognizing when the body is doing that. So anxiety, for example, would be, in that sympathetic range, and how to recognize that and how to maybe stop and orient. And right now I'm seeing you guys, I'm feeling the phone, I'm feeling the chair, I'm getting my body grounded and safe. The body doesn't know that it's here and it's okay. We have to help it bring it back. So there's different techniques in the somatic world of how to bring the nervous system back and be safe. Now, obviously, if I'm in a dark alley and somebody's behind me, I'm going to be afraid, and that's okay. I need that adrenaline to get out of there. But in most situations, it's not reality. Anxiety is past fear. It's not current day fear. Panic is past fear. It's trauma fear. It's not current day. So different situations. The Omicron thing, getting on an airplane, anything can trigger the body to where we're going back to wherever. And we, so it's getting to know when the body does that and bringing it back to safety.
Or, we could buy a Lexus and feel better about ourselves.
That lasts about 7 seconds.
Leslie, is there anything that we didn't ask you that you hope that we would, or any final thought that you want to leave us with?
Just a tribute to, I'm just a messenger. I created none of this. I learn all this stuff. Try to pass it on, just a tribute to all those who have and are continue to be in this field and help us understand what's happening, and just to honor all of those men and women.
You have a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of experience, and it's been a great pleasure and a gift for us to be able to have spent nearly an hour together. So, in all seriousness and sincerity,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks for being with us this afternoon, Leslie. This was great.
And I'll be having a shame attack in about 5 minutes. I'm kidding.
Our guest, Leslie Rawlings, Shana.
Yes, Christopher. Part two.
Do you want to know what my word was? Boundaries. That's the word I focused on, Shana. Right at the beginning, she was responding to your question about how to respond to people who are acting out of their trauma. Mm-hmm. And she talked mm-hmm. about boundaries. I will just share my riff on the boundary. Where my mind went was social media, in terms of how in social media places, boundaries get eliminated. People just feel free to go with, you know, just with whatever stuff they've got. They can just toss it out there. And so thinking about mental health and our shared common life and social media, to me, that's a place where the boundaries go away and everyone's swimming in everybody else's projections and
there's nobody there, right? It's just a screen, so I can say whatever I want. And it's not like I'm going to see the reaction.
Right, and people get reactive.
Yes.
And simply react. So people are just touching on everybody's shame and anger, and it just becomes this mess, and there's no boundaries.
And terrifyingly, if I understand some of what's happened in the news recently, the things that cause people to react are the things which tend to get the highest ratings on the algorithms.
Right. So the algorithms are feeding this kind of emotional reactivity.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
where are the adults? Where are the functional adults in the room?
Yeah. The part that jumped out at me was all the stuff of the body. The body knows.
Yeah.
And I think about how often in faith, you know, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, the body and its functions are shamed, and or the body and soul are separated, literally dissected one from the other. So what does that teach us, you know, growing up? If you did grow up observantly religious, or at least, you know, attending church on a regular basis, you know, What did you learn about bodies there? Probably not a whole lot that's good. But I think everything in social media, I think most of us don't look like what our culture says is beautiful or even attractive. So you're saddled with that. You're too short, you're too tall, you're too fat, you're too thin, you're whatever it is. And so we're sort of set up in this, again, you know, set up in this culture to have our bodies pummeled. And I think that's got to result in some separation. Going back to the show that we did on the environment, you know, and I said it was sort of the awakening for me was recognizing how impact to the environment impacts me personally in my physical self. What that feels like emotionally, physically, mentally, and how distanced I was from that. We're not taught to perceive things, you know, in our body, or even to know what the hell the body's doing. So that's a problem, you know. I mean, in terms of where are the functional adults? Well, they're disembodied. They're disembodied too.
We invite you to share your response to Leslie with us. Send us an email with your comment. Send us an email with your key phrase or favorite word from what Leslie shared with us from her wisdom and experience. Shana, we're going to close today's show by going back to our conversation with Leslie and how we closed our conversation with her. It was a fun little back and forth.
Now you're not done. Hold on now. So I've said the serious thing. Now the question is, have you tried a libertarian frozen pizza yet?
Is that a cauliflower crust pizza?
it's in your grocer's freezer case. They're individually wrapped and
isolated.
Is that going to help me with my shame attack later?
Absolutely. It's in a live free or die section of your grocer's freezer. Yes.
Really?
Yeah, libertarian frozen pizzas. Free yourself from the tyranny of having to share a slice. Be curious, Shayna.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. We are so grateful for our generous donors on Patreon who are the supporters of What in God's Name. You can join our generous donors by going to patreon.com. You can also find us on our website, whatingods.com. You can there sign up for our newsletter. And that, Shayna, is
W-H-A-T-I-N-G-O-D-S.
Leslie, again, thank you for being with us. Shayna, great to be with you.
Leslie, again, nice to meet you. Nice to spend this time together. And Chris, it's always great to spend time with you.
See ya.
Bye.